ladies and gentlemen, former President Bill Clinton.
Hi there. As many of you may be aware, my wife Hillary has been out promoting her book, and this book tour has taken her far, 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 far away. Far away from me. And well, this book tour is coming to an end, and I don't think there's anyone sorrier than I am. I don't want you to get the right idea. I mean, I love it when she's away. But in this case, not so much, because I want her to keep promoting the book because, well, we need the money. I don't know if you've read the book, but Hillary mentioned that when we left the White House all those years ago, we were dead broke. Some people thought she was telling a joke, that after 8 years, we Clintons were broke. With mansions to buy, we needed a loan. You see, our cash was also blown. She speaks 16 times, and what does she get? Another $3 million just to get out of debt. She lost her shirt, and I lost my pants. We can't live on an $8 million advance. Hillary's like Scarlett from Gone with the Wind. She swore she'd never go hungry again. When she heard that we're only half as rich as Mitt, she stuffed cash in her pockets till her pantsuit split. She speaks 16 times, and what'll she get? A salary bigger than the national debt. So buy that book, we really need the bread. If we get too broke, we'll have to share a bed.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this program, we're listening to a debate on should the U.S. oppose immigration. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Now on to round two, where the debaters address each other directly. I'm John Donvan of ABC News. We're at an Intelligence Squared U.S. debate at the Skirball Center for the Performing Arts at New York University. Our motion is don't give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. We have two teams of two members each who have been arguing it out. So I'd like to go to the side that is arguing for the motion, arguing don't give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. And Tom Tancredo, you were talking about the notion that right now we're importing poverty. And I want to ask you then, who is welcome? Who are the immigrants that are welcome?
Well, the people that Tamar and the mayor referred to as being these startup companies, these affluent, or at least people who became affluent and had all these skills, great, fine, it's wonderful. But I'm telling you that that's not what our immigration policy is today. Today, it is based almost entirely on something called family unification. And because we've had so many people coming into the country over such a long period of time from such low-skill, low-wage backgrounds, that's who we get.
And take 30 to 15 seconds to describe the dynamic of family unification.
Well, sure. It's if you get here, once you get here and get status as someone here legally, you can begin the process of bringing in your family, bringing in the immediate family, then bringing in extended family.
And the problem being?
The problem being it's coming exactly from the same group of people, the same economic group especially, that is predominantly low-skilled, low-wage workers. When we have, right now, at least, by the way, this is also legal, and I'm talking legal immigration.
As well.
Let alone the people that are coming across the borders illegally. Not many of those people are there, you know, have these kinds of skills you're talking about that are so desperately needed.
Let's hear a response from the other side. Julian Castro, who is mayor of San Antonio.
Thank you very much. First, the argument is built on this idea, again, that immigrants, both legal and illegal, are somehow soaking up welfare payments and other state subsidies, which is not borne out by the evidence. They do pay state income taxes and, in some cases, federal income taxes. They also pay sales taxes anytime they go and buy something. They pay hotel occupancy taxes every time they go into a motel or a hotel. They pay car rental taxes when they rent a car. They pay all types of fees to the government that help the government run and also patronize businesses and spend their money. And they have a tremendous economic impact on every local community.
In fact, they do.
Let me ask Chris Colbert.
That is true. An economic impact.
Let me bring in your partner. Chris Colbert, I just want you to respond to what we just heard, because I think that's news to a lot of people, a long list of taxes which the immigrants are paying. True or not?
It is true that aliens, legal and illegal, of course, pay sales taxes. They may indirectly pay property taxes. They may pay some income taxes if they're working under a false Social Security number. I'm talking about the illegal aliens here.
Which, by the way, they'll never be able to claim.
But the fiscal impact is undisputed. Now, there are some economic studies that look at the overall impact. You know, have we cheapened the price of some goods? Have we given some economic benefits? But if you narrow it to the fiscal impact, it is undisputed. Every single study in the last 10 years, it shows statistically that they are consuming these fiscal benefits. And if you just look at in terms of the benefit to us as taxpayers, we're losing on the deal.
Okay, let's go to Tamar Jacoby.
I mean, again, it all just depends how you measure it and how you look at it. If you look at what most immigrants pay their taxes to the federal level because they have their income tax withheld from their paycheck. So if you look at not just at the state level, but the federal level as well, and you look over their whole lifetimes, they actually pay in about as much as they take out. Because what costs is health and education.
The federal government's own numbers say they are $10 billion
in
the hole every year.
Is health and education, but then they turn into earners and taxpayers. And so if you look over their whole lives and you look at the federal story as well, it's about an even. Social Security, they pay in every year about $7 billion that they don't take out.
You can argue with this with CIS and other studies, but the National Academy of Sciences shows that you're not correct, Tamar, when you suggest that this isn't a fiscal drain on this country. It most certainly is.
It is
common sense. If you come here without an ability to provide a service that is well paid for, you are not going to be able to pay the income taxes you're talking about, but you are undeniably going to require the services for your children, the children who are in the public school system, the services
I consider educating the workforce for the future not as a welfare benefit, but an investment in the country.
Tamar, cede some time to your colleague, Julian Castro.
An investment. How about the investment in our prison system?
What Congressman Tancredo may remember as well is that in 2006, the Republican state comptroller of Texas did an analysis that said that analyzed how much revenue, state revenue, had been generated by illegal immigrants and found it at $1.58 billion and said that $1.16 billion in state resources had been taken by illegal immigrants. And so this idea that it just is so clear-cut across the country, that's not true.
Moving on to a different part of this argument, and that's the assimilation argument. Your opponent's raising the concern that the wave of immigrants that we're talking about, for the most part, poor immigrants and illegal immigrants as well, that they're not really becoming part of the culture. They come to dip their toes and to remain speaking Spanish and to remain with the dream of going back home, ultimately, and not really buying in. Can you take that on?
Sure. I'd say first that it's been a common theme in American history, this impulse to believe that anyone who is other than the dominant majority is somehow going to poison the culture. You know, the idea is that you see a common trajectory, no matter whether it's the Germans that Benjamin Franklin was talking about, the Chinese that we tried to exclude, or today, the Hispanic cultures.
Right, but I think your opponents are arguing that in several ways, this time it's different. And I want to go back to Tom Tancredo on this issue of assimilation. And why is it different?
What happened in the past is that the numbers allowed for, and also the timeouts, allowed for an assimilation process. Even if people didn't want to, they were almost forced into it. In order to get ahead in the country, of course, there was the issue of English. My grandparents, I can remember so distinctly. My grandmother and grandfather, the backseat of the car, Sunday afternoon drive, after a couple hours, they had been together for probably long enough in that close of proximity, so they started to argue about things. And my grandfather would lapse into Italian, and my grandmother would yell at him, "Speak America! American, damn it. And it was her purpose.
You're saying there's a critical mass in this case that makes it different.
That makes it much more difficult to
establish. I just want to see what the other side responds to that.
People in the second generation, even among poor children of poor Mexicans, everyone learns English. In the third generation, three quarters of the people can't speak Spanish anymore, can't speak to their grandmother.
There's a tipping point. If the percentage of the immigrant population is so high and is so disproportionately speaking one language or sharing one culture, then the pressure from the rest of us, the rest of the American society, on that group to assimilate is lower.
Chris, the point that was just made by your... The point that was just made was, for example, a policy that you mentioned before of denying in-state tuition prices, prices to immigrants, actually acts to stifle assimilation, because those are going to be kids who won't be going to school.
No, it actually acts to encourage people to leave and comply with the law and go home. That's the idea. Let me give one more point on assimilation. And that is, one of the greatest engines of assimilation, I assume we can all agree on this, is the public schools. According to a study done at a high school in San Diego, I think in 2002 or 2003, after 3 years of high school, the proportion of students self-identifying themselves as Americans went down 50%. The proportion saying they were hyphenated Americans, in other words, Mexican-American or something like that, went down 30%. And the number that they were saying they are a foreign nationality after 3 years of high school went up 52%.
And that study was done in the middle of the battle over Prop 187, which was denying benefits to immigrants and had commercials on TV saying stop them coming. I know the study you're talking about, Rumbaugh's study, and what he was showing was that when there's an anti-immigrant climate, people get alienated and identify with their group. And that's exactly what I would argue your side is creating, is an anti-immigrant climate that drives people to identify with their group and not assimilate.
I was born a refugee. I don't know if I'll ever see the old farmhouse I've heard about, but it's where I belong, there is no doubt, 'cause my whole family is from that farm. We never did nobody harm, and if you're confused by what you've heard, let me boil it down to a single word: wanna go home. Wanna go home. I have heard my grandpa say that on the street most every day the neighbor's kids would kick a ball with my dad when he was small. We were Christians, they were Jews, but it was no big deal. Religious views, so it was strange that at the point of a gun across the river, we had to run. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. We had Dipke, we had songs, and we all knew where we belonged. We grew crops, life was good there in the land where Jesus stood. Now we're scattered everywhere, but there's no peace anywhere. Now I'm just searching for some kind of sign, for some way back to Palestine. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I wanna go home.
And now, back to the debate. Should the U.S. oppose immigration?
Do you see the logic? I'm not taking sides, but But Tamar Jacoby has presented a logical explanation there. I'd just like you to take it
sure.
on.
Sure. It's the logical Tom argument is this. If people come into this country illegally, especially illegally, we should all go, huh, well, you're an immigrant, and therefore we should be happy about the fact you're here. We should not raise our concerns about it. We should not say that people should come into the country the legal way. There is a door. 165,000 people a month come in today still legally. We are the most liberal country in the world with regard to legal immigration. But the minute we start talking about the fact that people are violating American laws to get here, that's all of a sudden making it an uncomfortable place for immigrants. Well, baloney. I will not accept the idea that you can't talk the rule of law.
That is a good question. Are you guys against just illegal immigration, or are you against immigration, period?
I'm telling you.
What we are in favor of is increasing the percentage of aliens who are exactly the ones you're talking about, the job creators, the entrepreneurs that are starting the companies. The way you increase that percentage is you reduce illegal immigration to zero, and you change our priorities about legal immigration, and you give higher preference to people who are skilled.
And who's going to grow our food, and who's going to take care of our old people, and who's going to work in hospitals?
Well, the 14 million unemployed Americans would be a starter.
Okay, I'd like to go to questions from the audience. And this gentleman in the front row in a blue shirt.
Hi. Yeah, actually, the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, he's been talking a lot about an immigration policy that would allow a lot more individuals to come in from all different classes, but that would be focused on, you know, having these immigrants come in a little bit more quickly, a little bit easier, but they would agree to stay in cities that are necessarily in decline, like Detroit, for a period of 2 to 3 years or 5 years. I'm just curious, does that change any positions on either side, and could that be a viable plan that could maybe bring us together?
There is a place. Chris Kobach, do you want to?
Yeah. Seems like everyone wins.
Mayor of Detroit had already responded to that, I think.
Yeah, Mayor Bloomberg, you notice he didn't suggest that the illegal aliens come to any particular borough of New York. And the citizens of Detroit weren't asked whether, you know, they're facing unemployment, whether they would like a large number of unskilled folks to come in and help revive their economy by taking the jobs that they're already not getting.
Tamar Jacoby,
light of this, but I mean, it's true. Like, go to any immigrant neighborhood, they revitalize the neighborhoods. They open shops. They open restaurants. They've taken burnt-out neighborhoods across the country and revitalized them. On the same way, they create small businesses and their consumers. I don't know if we really want to send them all to Detroit, but the truth is, immigrants bring economic vitality and they create jobs.
He's
onto something.
The studies have shown that immigrants as a class have a higher rate of founding businesses than native-born U.S. folks. Mayor Bloomberg is correct, and that's why he has made the economic argument very powerfully for both more legal immigration and then doing something with the 11 million folks who are here illegally. It is not realistic that you're going to deport 11 million people because it would decimate the American economy. And this isn't about dollars and cents, but because these people are human beings. They're human beings.
Tom Crater, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah. What our opponents have done here is very skillfully, really great at it, and I give them credit for setting up all kinds of straw man arguments. You know, I have never once, in as many millions of words as I've expended on this topic, suggested everybody's got to be deported. All I've ever said is, look, all you have to do is obey the law. All you have to do is restrict the ability of an employer to give a job to somebody who is here illegally. People self-deport when that happens. It happened in Arizona. You do not have to round people up. These are all canards. These are all things that people on the other side say to make it look as though we're all people who are just waiting and biding our time until we can get these people out of our country.
Your policy is even worse than deportation.
Untrue. Why is it hard to suggest that obeying the law would be a good way to deal with immigration problems?
The theory behind the policy that Tom Tocchetto and Chris Kobach are advocates for is called attrition through enforcement. It's let's make immigrants' lives so miserable that they go home of their own accord. First of all, it doesn't work. Many of the immigrants who are here, the unauthorized immigrants, are people who've been here for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, who own homes, who own businesses, who are married to legal Americans and have citizen children. You might get a few to go home, but most are not going to go home. And honestly, I don't think that's how we want to deal with this population. These are people who we said, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, come on in, do some work for us.
Say we.
And now we're saying, let's make their lives so miserable that we'll drive them home.
Yes,
I don't think that's the way to deal with it.
Statistically, attrition through enforcement works. And it's basically the idea, it's the same law enforcement approach you have. If you have a section of Highway 95 where there are no police officers patrolling, you don't say, well, the only options are to have an amnesty, i.e. have no speed limit, or to catch 100% of the speeders. No, which would mean to deport
everybody.
But
Chris, I don't want our eyes to glaze over with the answer, okay. but when you say statistically, can you give us a sense of what you mean?
We have the numbers. Arizona, more than any other state, has tried to encourage people to leave, give disincentives, take away public benefits. From middle of 2008 to middle of 2009, the overall illegal alien population in the United States dropped 7%.
In Arizona,
it dropped 18%, more than double the national average.
Right.
So the only difference was the enforcement.
Go home. They went to other neighboring states.
Mexico isn't home. Why did the Mexican state of Sonora? That doesn't disprove their point that you want to get out of Arizona.
That's true, but it does make the point that their home is not home to many of these people anymore. Mexico, they've been out of Mexico for 10 or 15 or more years. They're married to Americans. They have citizen children. Mexico's not home anymore.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Four panelists are arguing for and against this motion. Don't give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. Stay with us. Welcome back. Our motion is, don't give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. This is Debate from Intelligence Squared U.S. We are in the question and answer section of the debate. I'm John Donovan of ABC News. We have two teams of two sides, each arguing this motion, don't give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. And now to some more questions.
The pro side has talked about potential changes to our existing immigration policy, and I wonder if the against side would also talk about what changes you would make, because I think most people would agree that what we have now doesn't work tremendously well.
So the key and the most important change is that we give the workers who we're going to need in the future a way to come legally. When the economy picks up and Americans go back to their better jobs and their year-round jobs, and they start to go to restaurants and they start to go to hotels and we start to build houses again, we're going to need immigrant workers. And in that day, I say we want to have them come legally. I also think we need enforcement. Our opponents aren't wrong about enforcement. We do need better enforcement on the border and better enforcement in the workplace to make sure we need to create legal channels and enforce against the people who are coming illegally. And we need some answer for the 11 million people who are already here and are not going home, no matter how miserable we make them with police stops and other things. The best answer for illegal immigration is a legal immigration system that works. If people are coming to work here, give them a legal way to come. And then stop the ones who are coming in.
I would also just add really very quickly that this idea that everybody agrees that they broke the law, but there are a million different ways that people break the law every single day of the year. And for instance, if you break the law and you're speeding, one of the models that's out there is something called deferred adjudication. Basically, under deferred adjudication, you still get punished either by paying a fine or doing community service. And as long as you don't commit another crime within a certain amount of time, you're able basically to wipe that off your record and get on with your life. That happens millions and millions of times. I would imagine just about every state in the United States. And
something
so
like an amnesty.
Like the model is not there already.
Amnesty is a horrible idea for four reasons. Number one, you're going to see that the fiscal impact is going to triple. The $89.1 billion a year that we're losing fiscally is going to become $2.6 trillion over 10 years. That was according to the Robert Rector study in 2007. The reason is simple. Right now, illegal aliens get food stamps, Medicaid, free school lunches, K-12 education. If they become legalized, then they get the big ones. Then they get Medicare and Social Security, and the price goes way, way up. Number two, it won't just be $11.3 million. The last time we had a major amnesty in 1986, according to the INS's own records, 398,000 illegal aliens quickly came across the border to falsely claim that they were already here and grab the amnesty. Number three, the notion that we are going to suddenly sift through this population and know who the terrorists are and who they aren't is demonstrably false. Number four, it's a slap in the face to the people.
Everybody
who
that
paid
did it the right way.
And did it the right way.
My fellow Americans, it is I, George W. Bush, and I've been laying low for a while, just laying low, keeping out of the public eye. It's been a time of refraction. Just a man alone with his thought. But things have been getting bad since I left. I mean, just recently, under President Obama's administration, the United States lost its AAA rating. That means millions of Americans could potentially be stranded on the side of the road with a flat tire. So that's why I'm coming back out of the non-public eye and talking about a fellow Texan who's running for president, Governor Rick Perry. I think he's swell. He's a nifty guy, and I think he's awesome. He's run for president, and as Texas governor, he has the record of all Texas governors for the most executions ever. And he did this, I'm proud to say, without the use of performance-enhancing drugs. No. So I'm out here. I want to sing a little song about him, promoting for him, and I figure if I can help him out, maybe I can get him the electrical votes that he needs. We've been suffering Barack too long, hearing his same old song. We waited to see who from the GOP could lead us. But from Texas there came a new name. With Perry's halo in the ring, now it's a new game. His Reagan charm is sure to please us. Plus he's Facebook friends with Jesus. He's the man if you're just a little nostalgic for me.
Like a bushed comb cowboy, ooh, ooh. Riding out on a horse like the host of a rodeo.
Texas homegrown cowboy.
More macho and right wing, it's like I am Bush 2.0.
He's like me,
but my mind isn't slow. Well, I really do like to campaign, wearing boots and I talk real plain.
But sometimes stay mute or you might stick a boot in your mouth.
Like I said, Texas should secede.
But that's okay, cause it's important in life to secede.
What if I need someone who's brainy?
We could always thaw out Janie.
Make him do the thinking while the lights keep shining on me.
Be a real lowbrow boy.
Get a NASCAR cap and start praying out in public more.
Better start right now, boy. Keep heading to the right and maybe people won't get sore
when they remember I work for Al Gore.
And now for something completely different.